All right, everybody, welcome to the Western Conference Sellers edition of the Drive and Play podcast series. As the name suggests, we'll be focusing on teams that play in the West that have not had a very good season and are in the midst of selling off some of their more marketable assets to make a run in the future. My name is Matt, joined here by Chase.
What's up, everybody?
And then we are lucky enough to be joined by Derek Zona from Copper and Blue. It's a blog that focuses on the Edmonton Oilers, but they do a lot of league-wide advanced statistics, and it's probably one of the best hockey blogs on the internet, so you guys should check it out, and we're very grateful to be joined by Derek. And we'll start by talking about the Columbus Blue Jackets. The worst team in the league, which is strange considering they're pretty talented. This is something that all of us have said and written throughout the year, that they're just running really terribly. And from a long-term perspective, the organizational outlook is actually pretty good. They have a lot of very good players, and they have a lot of those players signed for reasonable contracts and for reasonable lengths. And they also have a few prospects ranging from decent to very, very good. Just the question is goaltending. They have a few people who I would be surprised if they were still in Columbus at the end of the year. The problem is a lot of the players that might be more likely to be dealt, at least in terms of players who would get a decent amount back, they're all signed past this year. And I anticipate that that is actually a sticking point in terms of getting something back of value. Because of the CBA. So if you guys want, you can chime in on some of their assets and some of the moves that you would not be surprised to see.
It's interesting because, Paulson, San Jose's third line has been all over the place this year. And, their fourth line's actually been decent as far as the metrics go, at least. And If Wilson is as savvy as he has been in recent years, he might be able to steal him out from underneath Housen and put him in place for the playoffs as somebody to anchor the penalty kill and anchor those defensive draws for that team.
That'd be a really, really shrewd trade. I mean, Paulson reminds me. Well, it's hard to say who will get more back because they have similar contracts and they're both gone at the end of the year. But Paul Gostad in Buffalo, I mean, we already talked about him, but Paulson reminds me of somebody. I wonder if both, ostensibly both players will be traded, I think you can make a pretty fair assumption that they would both be traded. I think it'll be interesting to see who goes for more. Gostad makes a slight amount of money. He makes a little bit less, but that's just an aside.
Yeah, it's an interesting comparison. I mean, Gostad, he's also, I think he's got a little bit more of a reputation as being a physical guy, whereas, Paulson is the prototypical type-checking Swede, that everybody seems to, I don't know if it's a stereotype or, bagging on him, but that's a very apt comparison. I don't know what Gostad's reputation is around the league with GMs. Yeah, but Paulson's the guy from Anaheim with, he's taken a team deep into the playoffs, and he's the workhorse. So I think that's a really good comparison for both of them.
As far as the back end goes, earlier in the year I was hearing rumors about Frederick Tootin maybe moving, and his contract's really good for the type of player he is. I mean, he's been using the defensive zone. He's got like a 45% zone start, but I mean, he's still positive. He definitely pushes the play forward. So I don't know if he'll necessarily be moved, but if he is, it seems like they could at least get some very nice pieces back for him. I just don't know if that's...
I don't think that Tootin would be hard to move because he's not getting paid much for what...
Yeah,
he's a top 4D nearly anywhere he would go, and it's so strange to look at this team because they have so many decent contracts that, well, I mean, except for, you know, maybe Brassard's deal, they it's not like there's a bunch of really terrible contracts there. Nash's is a little out of bounds, but he was their franchise guy, and right. they wanted to keep him. But I don't think Tootin would be that hard to move. If they really wanted to move him, and I think it would be a mistake, but I don't think he would be that hard to move. Even to a team like, you know, a team like Dallas, if they can get a top four D for that cheap, I think Nieuwendyk would step in there. You know, I think even poor teams can take a look at that deal and think, you know what, that's not that bad for a top end guy. I mean, I think the guy that's going to change everything is going to be Carter. And, you know, I think if Housen plays it right, he could get a hell of a price for him from anybody. I mean, that opens it up to Toronto. You're looking at, I mean, Talon's in Florida, and who knows what he would pay. I mean, he's insane when it comes to overpaying, you know, free agents and in trade. So Florida, Toronto, I think even
Los Angeles.
Hell, even Ottawa might, you know, put McCulloch back on the wing, and I don't know if LA would. Although Lombardi, he does make a big. I don't see them reuniting the anti-dry island duo.
I'd definitely like to see it.
So would I.
So yeah, I mean, I guess what it's going to come down to with Columbus probably is those one-year forwards we talked about, and then Carter, what they can do with Carter. But I mean, as far as going forward, the team is right as they sit right now. Besides goalies, obviously, they're going to need to figure out what the hell to do in the offseason with Mason. I mean, I guess they can target somebody in the free agency market. It's just, what can they get back? Will it work into what they should do in the future or what they should do going forward? Because they obviously need some goaltending, maybe a little more blue line help. But if they can get Carter off the books and get maybe a draft pick and a nice young player, then they'll have some room in the offseason to address goaltending, address back-end defense, and address, or even middle-of-the-road defense, and then address their forward situation up front with the guys that they're going to lose to free agency.
Man, you're saying off the books like he's like he's an albatross or he's dead weight. He's been so good this year when he's been healthy.
Yeah, I don't mean it like that. I just mean away from Columbus.
All right, well, on to Anaheim then. They really didn't do that much. You know, I mean, obviously there was roster change, but they didn't really do much substantively to actually improve their roster. I mean, part of that is because, again, they're a team that's always going to be around the floor unless they're truly contending for a Stanley Cup. But they're really not that terrible on the back end. It's just they don't really have many forwards that can play well at the NHL level.
Yeah, well, the thing with Anaheim going forward is after this year, they only have 13 players on the books and $40 million in salary. So they're going to have a lot of this dead weight coming off, and they're going to be free to maneuver a lot of different ways. And we've obviously heard that with stuff like the only two players who aren't going anywhere are Salani and Koivu. So they can pretty much try and do what they want, and they're not going to be hampered by any really terrible contracts going forward. I mean, the longest contract they have on the books is Bobby Ryan through, and I guess Beauchemin and Spezza. And all those guys are all signed through 2014-15, but after that, I mean, they have no player on the books. So, I mean, they can go a lot of different ways.
So I think this is a really interesting team because Murray clearly got fooled by percentages last year. They had one line, Solani on the power play, and Vishnovsky had a Norris-like season. Yeah, probably didn't get enough time on the PK to actually win the Norris, but had like a Norris-like season last year. Now he's a little banged up this year, but you can't come into the talent's there, but you can't come into an NHL season with Cam Fowler playing the toughs in his second year, you know, relying on Lucas Spezza to be, you know, one of your top four guys nearly the entire year. And, I like the Tony Ludman signing, but he's not been as good as he was in Buffalo. I really thought he was the guy driving play in in Buffalo when he was there, and he's just not been as good. And some of the moves that Murray has made are kind of weird. I get bringing in Cogliano. You know, he's got all the tools, the speed and the skill and whatever. He can't win a faceoff to save his life, but he overpaid Cogliano by a bunch, and had just brought no defensive depth in. It's a mess. And there's just no way you should be counting on Cam Fowler to play the Tufts. And it's like he got last year, he looked at that team and didn't realize that Hiller was carrying him and that Perry was on a once in a lifetime season, and he just let it roll. But if everybody's available there, he has to get rid of his what you're gonna call assets. And it almost has to be, unless you're gonna try to move, you know, he just signed Beauchemin, so it almost has to either be Spezza or Ryan. There's not much else in there that's movable, that's desirable. I don't really think they're gonna be selling. I don't think they're gonna be buying. I think they're just gonna kinda let it go. And I mean, if you look at their roster, what can you, they're probably not ever gonna get rid of Getzlaff, or they shouldn't. That would be stupid. Perry coming off of, you know, an MVP season. And who else on that team do you want?
Honestly, if I'm Anaheim, I'm probably trying to trade Perry as compared to Getzlaff or Ryan. Because I just think I think Getzlaff and Ryan are better than Perry is. Obviously, Perry was really lucky last year to get to 50 goals and win the MVP and all that stuff. But I mean, the problem with Getzlaff and with trading either Getzlaff or Perry are they're only signed through next year, whereas Ryan is signed through the next 3 years after this. So if I'm a GM on the other side of the coin, I'm trying to get Ryan, whereas I'm not necessarily as interested in Getzlaff or Perry.
Yeah, if you're Doug Wilson, or if you are Ray Sherrill, or if you are George McPhee, and you're looking around the league for some filler, or trying to, you know, give your team a jump start, whatever cliches they use at the deadline, would you really look at Anaheim's roster and say, ooh, yeah, you know, I really need that guy? And again, outside of Getzlaff or Ryan or Fowler, do you really look and say, ooh, yeah, I need that guy?
Well, I was actually...
But he's banged up again.
I think...
Maybe with Wisnowski.
Yeah, well, that's the problem. He's also signed for next year at a pretty high cap hit for somebody who's, you know, pretty old. So it's not like he expires at the end of the year or anything like that.
Right.
I was actually
back to your point about do you want to carry a salary like that into cap uncertainty, and especially a salary of a guy who's 35 years old.
Yeah, that's actually what I was thinking. But thinking about it, you know, if we go through the contenders, I'm having a hard time thinking of the, you know, the truly elite teams in the league that would even need Wisnowski enough, you know, or a player like him enough to give up what Anaheim is likely asking for, because they're likely asking for too much. I mean, I have no basis to make, but it's a pretty reasonable assumption to make. Plus cap uncertainty, plus, you know, his contract even makes it, you know, it makes it difficult because there are plenty of teams who can't take on that cap hit without sending somebody back, and then there's the issue of sending a roster player back when you're making a cup run, all this other stuff. So I mean, he would be someone I would try to move, but I just don't know how likely it is that they would be able to get an asset back. And that's assuming that no trades are made to the big three.
Right, well, this is why I think they should trade one of the big three.
I agree.
Because they can likely get back some sort of first-round draft pick, some sort of young player who could potentially step in and just be a body for them up front next season, if nothing else. I mean, I think that has the chance to replenish some of their depth, and then they'll still have a boatload of money to go out and sign these guys, but they won't have to sign quite as many, and they'll be able to possibly get have a little higher quality in the guys that they do end up signing.
Yeah, they're not just signing five or six depth guys either. They've got to come up with essentially five or six
top. They have to come up with a second line.
Six top eight guys, you know.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's Koivu, Solani, or Blake are all gone, so they pretty much need a second line.
And that's not really been that effective of a second line for long stretches. I mean, obviously on the power play they've been really good, but they go into shells at times. Although they are getting some of the harder work when the top line is getting easier work. So I don't know, maybe they are effective.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think they should trade one of the big three and just go from there. Just because it'll help them get depth up front, and they'll still have a ton of money next year.
The other elephant in the room is they're probably not going to be able to re-sign both Getzlaff and Perry once they're UFAs. So, you know, unless they maybe just ride it out and then see how next year goes, and then if they're bad again next year, they trade one of them at the deadline, if there even is a season. But, I mean, that has to factor into the calculus in some way, because I mean, on one hand, it lowers their value because obviously Bobby Ryan is the best asset of the three, but on the other hand, you know, they almost have to make a move. I mean, it's almost like a similar situation, I guess, not exactly, but close, with Weber and Suter both becoming, well, obviously, you know, Weber's an RFA, but both players so close to unrestricted free agency. And both players should make a lot of money. And, you know, will they be able to keep both? And if the answer is yes, then that's fair enough. But if the answer is no, then how are you going to treat these assets?
So moving on to the team who is clearly in sell mode and has been in sell mode for the last 3 years, the Edmonton Oilers, the pride and joy of Alberta in the midst of the 6-year rebuild plan, according to Kevin Lowe. They will be selling and selling often. And I'll start with the number one and the player that everybody's most interested in. It's got to be Alex Hemsky. Fans gave up on him at the beginning of the season. Fans gave up on him as soon as he was called on draft day. So it's almost a foregone conclusion that he's gone. Most of the Oiler bloggers have kind of made their peace with it, but know that it's gonna suck when it comes time to actually dealing him. You know, he's already being the best of the rumor mongers are already linking him to Pittsburgh, Detroit, LA, Washington. He's been linked nearly everywhere. So, yeah, he's definitely gone. He's finally starting to get his shoulders back to health, but he's underperformed this year, largely due to the shoulders and largely due to the fact that the kiddos in Edmonton are taking a lot of the cherry minutes from him now, especially on the power play. So where do you think he's going, and what price do you think he can fetch?
Well, the good news is his contract is up, so... And he's not on that high of a cap hit. So it's not like it's an albatross deal, although really any expiring deal isn't an albatross. But, I mean, he's a talented player, and I think even though he's a, you know, in the eyes of GM, is the, you know, the soft Euro, I mean, he's still very, very skilled. And I mean, maybe I'm off here, but I would actually see... There are plenty of playoff contenders who are starved for offense and, you know, who could see them, you know, see him fill in on the power play. You know, you put him on a line and give him very, very soft minutes and give him, you know, a Sedin-esque offensive zone start. And he could really, you know, add a decent amount, you know, in terms of offensive value. The problem is, I mean... Is there, how much of a market is there for him? I mean, yeah, he's been linked to a handful of teams, but is this interest genuine, or is it just certain rumor mongers trying to get ahead of the curve?
Well, Oiler bloggers think that no matter where he goes, He will dominate, carry the team deep into the playoffs, and rub Edmonton fans' noses in it for a very long time, as seems to happen every time the Oilers trade someone away, Chris Pronger being the noteworthy one there. I actually think he's, you know, I love the soft Euro tag on that guy, because that guy puts himself in worse situations on the ice, charging around the offensive zone, taking huge hits, and, you know, he's thrown it out there for the Oilers for a really long time and, you know, proved what he could do in the playoffs in 2006. And I think a really, really smart team, Detroit, but, you know, even someone like San Jose or it's a shame, actually, that Phoenix has no money, because he's like an ideal fit for a Coyotes team that would be trying to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at some of his numbers here, he's playing some really, really, really tough minutes. Yeah.
Yep, always has. I mean, he's been one of the best even strength forwards in the league for a really long time.
He's definitely pushing the play in the right direction, even if his zone starts are probably accounting for some of that. I mean, his tough minutes still, there's something to be said for that. So, yeah, a smart team will definitely look at him as a piece that can give them some quality minutes against the other team's best players, and, I mean, keep the puck in the right end. As far as what he might be able to get, or what the Oilers might be able to get for him.
I think it's a pretty decent case. This is a pretty decent case of perception of a player league-wide. I mean, or, again, we don't know, but the likely perception of a player league-wide is a lot different than his actual production, his actual, you know, ability. But, you know, how some players are overrated by GM types, he's one that is underrated by GM types, and unfortunately for the Oilers, that, you know, means a fair amount of value is lost in terms of any trade that would actually be made.
I guess, yeah, the Flyers have a first-round pick for Chris Versteeg, so.
I think Penner brought them Colton Tubert in a first-round pick last year. I think you're looking at either a close to, you know, making the jump defensive prospect, or just a first round pick straight up. I don't, you know, because it's expiring, I don't think he's going to bring a huge bounty, but I think you guys are, your comps are in the right area with Versteeg.
I mean, San Jose would, the problem with San Jose, like, that would be a pretty slick move. I think the problem with them is they don't really have that much in the farm to give.
They gave it all to Minnesota.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's two other ones. Ryan Smith, I would hope that Tamalini isn't silly enough to trade Smith again. You know, the last time that happened, it didn't work out so well. And now we've heard Darren Dreger, I think, on TSN, I think that's who brought it up, say that he sees Sam Gagne as somebody who might be moving at the deadline if the Oilers want to bring back a defender. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me, because if you, you know, why would you overpay for a defender at the deadline when everybody's looking for him? Why wouldn't you wait to head into the draft, you know, more around the draft and try to find one? But you know, that is the rumor, and you know, so he is probably, you know, if Dreger knows it, and he's not, you know, certainly an internet rumor guy. He's usually plugged in, so there's probably some kind of fire behind the smoke.
Do you think if they were to move him, do you think they would try to trade for, and, you know, not necessarily a roster player, but somebody who's, you know, 1 year away from being in the league, or do you think they would try to just trade for, you know, for a draft pick?
At some point, this team is going to have a real defense. And my guess is if they're trying to move Gagne, that it would be in combination with some other defensive prospect, maybe for a roster player. For a guy who's 1 year away from the league, that means he's, what, 3, 4, 5 years away from being a top four guy, you know? This team is starved for top four guys, They have Gilbert and Smead and the ghost of Ryan Whitney as their real only their true top four guys. With Whitney's injury problems, they can't count on him. They've got to move him for a roster defenseman.
I guess as far as going forward with the Oilers, they're going to have a lot of money to spend this offseason, so if they can get a few minor assets for these guys who aren't going to be there, it's definitely going to be interesting to see what they do in free agency.
Yeah, speaking of free agency, I don't know how much of an effect this actually has. I mean, I think it exists. To what extent, I don't know. Is Edmonton's probably going to have to overpay to get free agents to play for them. So that's the other issue.
I think any team that finishes 30th in the league three straight years is going to have to overpay anybody to come play for them.
Well, of course, but I'm, yeah, okay.
You can't, yeah, maybe it's cold and icky, and, you know, maybe, you know, the new arena is going to change all of that, according to everybody, but until they start winning, it doesn't matter.